Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. Here's something to celebrate. Tonight, and for the next several months at least, the astounding Broadway performer Amber Gray will be leading the Time Warp at Studio 54 in the Roundabout Theatre Company revival of Richard O'Brien's The Rocky Horror Show. The production, which opened last week, is directed by Sam Pinkleton. Gray is playing Riff Raff, the role originated by the show's creator, and in this instance particularly, playing couldn't be a better word. Gray's Riff Raff is sneering, leering, and bouncing around the stage, noticing and knowing everything. It's another magnetic performance from one of the stage's absolute best. If you're not familiar, Amber Gray originated the role of Helene in Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812, and was nominated for a Tony Award for her portrayal of Persephone in Hadestown.
I don't know about you boys, but if you're like me, then hanging around this old man hole is bringing you down. 6 feet under, getting under your skin. Cabin fever is a setting in. You're stir crazy, stuck in a rut. You could use a little pick-me-up. I can give you what it is you crave. A little something from the good old days. I got the wind right here in a jar. I got the rain on tap at the bar. I got sunshine up on a shelf. Allow me to introduce myself. Brother, what's my name? My name is...
She's my favorite, and I sat down with her in New York at the end of last month. Amber Gray, I am an enormous fan of yours, and I'm so excited to get to speak with you about your current work and your career.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
What does Rocky Horror mean to you? What's your previous relationship with the story and the show, if you have one?
I do. I first discovered Rocky Horror as an adolescent with my theater friends. We went to the library and took out a CD of the Rocky Horror Picture Show soundtrack and Jesus Christ Superstar soundtrack, and The Who's Tommy. So I thought that all musicals were rock operas when I was young. I didn't know there were other genres. And I burned that CD to a tape, whatever it's called.
You dubbed it.
Dubbed it. And I never had the liner notes, you know, it was just me listening to it over and over again on this cassette tape. And I really fell in love with its main theme of don't dream it, be it, and all the freaks are welcome here was very helpful to me as a young person who was shy and insecure and didn't really know who I was in the world yet. You know, it was very inspiring to me. And then a couple years later, I saw the movie. And then a few years after that, saw my first shadow cast in Boston. So it's been in my life a long time.
When you saw the movie, do you recall if there were elements of the plot or visuals that surprised you having only heard it up till then?
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, the costumes are really burned into my brain. The imagery is so beautiful. I think, I was very pleasantly surprised. And also, because I couldn't necessarily tell what they were saying.
Right.
Just listening to it, like a lot of the plot became more clear when I saw the movie for the first time.
And then was the shadow cast production also an exciting and new thing? Because that's such a part of the lore and the legacy of all of it.
Totally. Yeah, I had no, you know, I've only done that a few times in my life. I had no idea what I was getting into. Like, people kind of knew the rules, like what to call back and
right.
What props to bring. I didn't know any of that. It was just really like a very wild experience for me, kind of looking around being like, what is happening right now? This whole other relationship with the thing that I didn't know existed.
And now you are doing it. You are doing it at Studio 54. You're doing it on Broadway.
Yeah.
And you're playing Riff Raff.
Yes.
Which is so exciting and incredibly incredibly cool. What about Riff Raff appeals to you, and how did you parlay your way into this particular role? I mean, and you know, people had to decide that you could do it, but of course you could do it.
Well, when I did see the movie, all of the aliens in the cast, well, you know, they're all very feral, and that really appealed to me as a young person. Like, they're sort of abandoned and their ability to be wild. I envied it a little bit as a very shy kid. So I loved all of the aliens. And I went down a huge rabbit hole of Tim Curry movies when I was a kid. You know, I was like Legend, Clue, Annie, It, Rocky Horror. He's such a chameleon and so absurd. And that to me was like the essence of what a great actor was a Tim Curry, you know. And I fell in love with Richard O'Brien as Riff Raff. And there have been a couple times in my life I've played Puck. And he's always sort of in my mind or on my vision board, if you will. Like I do a lot of thinking on whatever I think Richard O'Brien is doing as Riff Raff. I try to tap into that essence when I've played Puck a couple of times. So mm-hmm. It's like, I just love all of those actors in that movie. They're so wonderful.
The like knowledgeable servant assistant, Puck, Riff Raff.
Interesting. Yes.
Do you have things that you know that they know that nobody else in the cast, no other character, and nobody in the audience needs to know that Riff Raff knows?
Absolutely. Yeah, there are lots of secrets. There's lots of knowing maybe before the audience knows. Yeah, they're both observers, I think, both of those characters. But and I love doing that work. I've been in lots of shows in my career where I never leave the stage. I just get to listen and observe. And figuring out those moments is really important to me as an actor. I had a brilliant acting teacher in grad school named Richard Feldman, who teaches at NYU Grad Acting as well as Juilliard. And he really believed you figuring out how to listen to the other characters is more important than you figuring out how to say your own lines. And you teach the audience how to watch the play when you're on stage observing. So it's a skill I take quite seriously, and it's something I love. And it takes time, right? Like, I probably won't be there for another couple of months before I really understand how to observe the whole play. Because right now I'm still thinking about 8 counts, you know?
Right. And you're still in previews,
yeah,
as we're speaking.
And changing things.
You're still rehearsing during the day and doing the show at night, which must be...
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting. It has to be.
It's really exhausting, but so fun. I mean, honestly, one of the hardest parts is the adrenaline after these early shows. It's very hard to come down. Like, I find myself going to bed super late when I know better and I know I should be sleeping. It just feels impossible. There's so much cortisol rushing through your body.
Yeah. I have that sometimes just after seeing a show.
Sure. That's right. Yeah. It's still the like same kind
like,
of vibrational
good,
high
and I
or whatever
can't
it
go
is.
To sleep.
Yeah. So it'll take time to get into that kind of perfect flow state, but we'll get there and I can't wait. It's going to be fun.
As you rehearse and develop the character and when you've played characters that observe, I think that they also have had a lot of agency. Like, I've always found you on stage to be powerful and making moves, whether they be like trouble, making trouble or taking care of things.
Yeah.
Is that something that is in on the page or something that comes from in you, do you think?
It's a very good question. I mean, I've originated a lot of roles.
You have.
So I kind of get to make them whenever I want. So I do think some of it comes from me. And the other thing, on the page, when the character doesn't necessarily do very much and you do get to flesh out all those moments where you're observing, that's all from your imagination, which I just love. I had a dresser once when I was doing Macbeth who was like, you always play the magical character. And I was like, ooh, I'm honored. Thank you. I don't know that I would call it that, but sure. You just said, yeah, agency and yeah.
Yeah, just a ton of power. Like we're constantly, my husband and I love Comet and listen to the cast recording a lot.
Awesome.
And then when I told him, well, let me do this. We saw you in Oklahoma at Bard and Comet, Hadestown, the last Sondheim show there at the Shed.
Yeah, here we are.
And we're so excited to see this. When people come to you with this gooby energy that I'm coming to you with right now.
Gooby.
And maybe without, you know, the professional opportunity to be, you know, here's a microphone, let me tell you how much I love you. How do you receive that in the world? Are people cool? Mostly chill?
Oh,
is
gosh.
It a whole thing?
It's a whole thing, especially for roles you originate, right? That people get attached to. And, well, playing Persephone in particular, you know, this goddess. I always joke that my biggest fan bases are like the gay bears and teenage girls. And teenage girls, they're still figuring out how to be in the world and who they want to be. And I'm a mother. My kids aren't teenagers yet, but I have a lot of space for young people. They are fragile. And a lot of times they'll start crying and or shaking and it's very intense. I'm like, you're okay. I try to have those interactions be limited to natural encounters around the theater district, though, like on the sidewalk running into somebody. The stage door is pretty intense for me because I do receive a lot of that energy. You know, most actors are pretty empathic. It's like it's a very intense vibration to receive every single show. Mm-hmm. It can be hard. I have gone out there a couple of times for Rocky Horror. I'm sort of infamous for not doing the stage door, but I've been doing it, and I find, you know, somebody used the term music cult for Rocky Horror, which, yeah, I just love. It's totally a music cult. Been around for 53 years. So that loving of the role in the show is like so greater than me. It has nothing to do with me, which I love. And there's a kind of a freedom and disconnect in that for me to engage with the people. And they're just like such sweet, gentle nerds. All those people who come to the stage door. They're really, yeah, lovely. This round has been okay so far. But a lot of times I have a very hard time taking it in.
Amber Gray is starring in Richard O'Brien's The Rocky Horror Show at Studio 54.
The director of this production, Sam Pinkleton, who of course has been working for ages but has a new, yeah, gloss on him after, yes, the huge success, deserved success of Oh Mary.
Yeah.
Did you know him before this?
Yeah. He's been my choreographer three times. So he choreographed Great Comet, starting in The Tent. So we did two productions of it in The Tent, and then we moved to Broadway at the Imperial. So he choreographed all three of those. He choreographed Macbeth, and then he choreographed Here We Are. And when we were together in Here We Are, he said, Amber, if I'm ever in a room with you again, it will be as your director. And I was like, I'll hold you to it, brother. And here we are. Which is pretty cool.
Very cool. Yeah. And obviously I could have known those credits. What do you have in Riff Raff that you are still looking, mm-hmm, at, that you are still exploring, that you're still developing, that you're, mm-hmm, willing to share?
Sure. I mean, the thing about musicals is there are a lot of, you have the director, but you also have the choreographer and the music director, right? Who want you to do certain things stylistically in your singing of it. So you have these kind of three different departments all giving you regular notes and who have their vision of how you're going to play the thing. So it's really kind of reconciling those three humans' opinions with my opinion. It's like just finding a way for all four to exist. That's probably the hardest work. There's so many numbers I had no idea I'd be dancing in. Like, I thought I would sing the ensemble parts in those songs, but I'm like actively dancing in a lot of songs and trying to figure out, like, what does this mean for my whole arc of this character? I'm still figuring that out. And sometimes I just straight up don't know. I'm like, I'm just going to do the moves and be here. But I'll know soon.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Your singing voice, your speaking voice as well. Your singing voice is an incredible, incredible power.
Mm.
It is just one of my favorite sounds in the world.
Thank
Again,
you.
Not to be,
wow,
so effusive. And when did you know you could sing? How did you learn that you could sing?
I mean, I grew up singing in kind of come all choirs in church or in public school. You know, big old choirs of 50 people or smaller, like Madrigals with 12. And I was in a really cheesy a cappella group for a while where you sang like 80s pop songs.
Could be worse.
Yeah, could be worse. But I didn't have a particularly strong voice. And actually, my high school theater teacher was incredible. And he really believed a cast was a team and that you gave the weakest link the lead so they'd get better. And I had the lead three shows in a row. And one of those shows was Mary Magdalene and Jesus Christ Superstar. And I just straight up couldn't sing it. Like, I could not sing a lot of her higher notes. And my voice would crack every night and go out.
And in high school, they don't transpose for you.
No.
Oh, God, they can't. I mean, how could they? They don't have the time.
No. So, yeah, it was humiliating. But this is what I love about the voice, is how much stronger it can get. So, and I tell people quite a bit, young musical theater people who don't know what they're getting into, right? Or even when I go back to acting conservatories where they a little bit like poo-poo the American musical. It's like not cool. They're wearing all black and, you know, chain smoking on breaks, whatever. They're very different than the musical theater kids. And those are the people I trained with, right?
Yes. A foot in both ponds.
It's why I'm shocked I ended up having a musical theater career. I did not expect it. Speaking of my teachers at grad school, Deb Lapidus is the singing teacher, also an NYU grad in Juilliard. She really explained placement and the physicality of singing in a way that my brain just understood. It really worked for me, and I got a lot better in those 3 years. It's like having a yoga teacher who finally explains crow pose in a way where I'm like, I've never thought my body would do this. Sometimes you just need to hear it in a new way. She really worked for me, Deb Lapidus, and I got better in those 3 years. But even still, 2 years out of school is when I auditioned for Great Comet, and I botched that audition. I only learned by ear then. I can now read music. Dave Malloy had done the demos down the octave. So I sang Charming down the octave and he let me sing the whole thing. And he was like leaning on his hands. And when I was done, he said, Amber, that was so weird. I just wanted to see if you could get through it. He was like, sing it up the octave. I was like, okay. Now, I knew Rachel Chafkin by then, and I had already done a musical with Dave Malloy by then at St. Mark's Church, like this little, small little show. And thank God, because I got a second chance. Like if it was in a big casting house, I would have been blacklisted and escorted out of the room, you know?
Yeah.
So I did get a second chance. I got the role because they liked me as the actor for that part, not mm-hmm. because I could sing it particularly well. And I didn't have some of those notes in Charming for a long time when we did it at Ars Nova. I would have to warm up a ton. Some of those notes weren't always there. But then by the time we were doing it a year later in the tent and doing morning show presentations at 7 a.m., I could sing all those notes without warming up. That's how quickly the voice gets better yeah. if you're doing it every day. It's
muscle.
Pretty rad.
Sure. Yeah. And if yeah. you know how to use it
yeah.
without just breaking it apart.
Yeah. I learned how to use it with a teacher, but then I stretched into lower and higher notes over the years by just doing the work every day, which is really special to see and feel that progress.
Now if you sighing about you.
When you have a song in your bones, in your larynx, in your lungs, in your diaphragm, do you ever sing the whole thing and then at the end go, huh, like, did I say all the words in the right order? Because you're just gone?
Totally. Yes.
And is that exciting or scary or both?
I deeply trust that flow state because you only get there once, yes, the material is in your bones. And you can typically go on the ride. But yes, every now and then you'll be like, what happened? What did I just do? And you've always done the right thing. But there's also a phenomenon in long runs. Like every 3 months or so, the entire cast will short circuit together. People will go up on notes or words or will trip downstairs because they suddenly think about, wait, do I take off my right foot or my left foot? And they've never thought about it before,
sure,
right?
Sure, yep.
So they just tumble down the stairs.
Oof.
I find the whole cast kind of does it in a different way. And then you go deeper. And by the end of a year, your last show, you look around, your peripheral vision opens up. You're like, wow, has that person always been there? You just like, you notice more and more things the longer you do the show. And that last show, there's stuff you learn that you wish you had known in the first reading. It's like, it's just amazing how you can always get better at the job.
When you're done with a year run, is there a post-show adrenaline dump, depression type thing?
Severe postpartum normally.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if it was a long run. Pretty severe. And it's just about aching for the people. I mean, a lot of performers in New York were hustling through life, right? Especially if you have a family, you only get to see your friends if you work with them. So it can be very heartbreaking. And Comet in particular, those women are some of my best girlfriends. Like I love them so deeply. And it was really painful to suddenly not be around them every day. Same was true with Hadestown. And that was weird because my new job was right across the street. Like my new stage door exited to my old marquee, right? And it was like looking through glass at my friends on the other side being like, hey guys, do you want to come out and play?
For a little while, your picture's still on the door.
Yeah, you're totally.
Like, hi, me from before.
From before. I just really missed my friends.
Yeah.
It can be hard, that transition. Yeah.
What kind of director has Sam Pinkleton proven to be? What's the method? His methods that you are observing and hopefully appreciating, enjoying.
I will say, having had him so often as a choreographer, he works in a very similar way. Like, I don't feel like I'm learning something new about him per se, but he is very clear on his vision long before rehearsals start, which I find so impressive. Like, he kind of knew how he was going to do everything. And there's space for collaboration, which is a rare combo. I find a lot of directors are excellent sort of curators of great artists and they know who to pick, but they don't actually have an idea about how to execute the show, which is okay, but you have to be clear with your actors, like, you got to do a lot of this work for me,
right.
You know? And yeah, it just doesn't always happen that somebody has such a clear vision as well as being super collaborative and open to your ideas too. It's pretty awesome.
Our guest is Amber Gray. She's playing Riff Raff in the Roundabout Theater Company revival of the Rocky Horror Show, now running at Studio 54. Has having kids, has being a mother changed your relationship to the work, to your body in the work, I suppose. I mean, I'm not just asking you about your own body. Although we could talk about it.
No, I understand. I understand. I mean, I had two home births, so that was very empowering. I've never loved my body more after having those two children. I'm a very strong person physically, and that proved that to me. And then I was always able to use that in my work, you know, like even if I'm like, I don't think I can do this, I actually know that I can.
Yeah. You have to remind yourself.
Wait, and that I've is done. Really amazing. Yeah. You're like, come on. You might not want to do it. That's something else. Yeah, I'm very impressed by what my body is able to do. And I don't always take the best care of it. You know, it's not like I revere it necessarily. I'm pretty hard on my body in all ways. But yeah, I love performing. I love how physical it is, live performance especially. It is such an Olympic event, and I love that about it.
Do your kids know what you do?
They do. They do know what I do, and they have seen me in quite a few shows.
What are their ages, sorry?
7 and 10.
All right.
Yeah. I brought them to tech rehearsal the other day, and they saw one of the final dresses. We had two final dresses. Never has that happened, ever.
What makes that happen?
Normally, your final dress is probably your first run through with all of the elements. That's pretty typical. But the fact that we were ahead enough to do two nights in a row of final dress was very impressive.
Got it.
So my kids came to one of those. They've already seen it, and they, yeah, it's so fun. I mean, I love having them around for my shows, but my eyebrows are bleached right now, and they continue to think I look really ugly. And then when they saw me in my alien costume, they're like, that was pretty cool, Mom. We don't think you're so ugly anymore. I was like, thanks, babies.
Go alien for the kids. There's nothing else.
Exactly. So, and they understood the plot in this way that blew my mind. They're like, so you're the new master now, huh?
Oh.
I was like, yeah, you understood the play completely.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, great. Dramaturgs ahead.
Yes. Yeah.
You are wearing all green today.
I am.
Which I observe, especially because so many of your cast recordings and set designs have been red. Really, really red. So I almost expected you to show up in red, even though Persephone does wear green. But all
fascinating. I never thought about that.
It's like Comet, Hadestown.
Yes.
Warriors.
Oh, touche. Yeah, you're right. But I weirdly wear like acid green in a lot of my roles. And it was a joke for a while that I had have to have a little bit of acid green somewhere, like something borrowed, something blue, you know, for good luck on stage. So. It's why they put the green little gems on my pants that here we are.
All right.
A little nod to...
to your acid green.
Yes. I just like wearing sort of a color for the day, like a monochromatic. It can be clashing colors of green, but yes, today is green for spring.
Speaking of warriors, were you involved in like a workshop thing that happened recently? Okay.
Yeah.
Are you not allowed to talk about it? You're making...
I know I can talk about it some, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
basically just like, was it as thrilling as I would think it would be?
It's...
To record the record and to
incredible.
Get back in the room.
Incredible. I'm obsessed with it.
I'm obsessed with it too.
It's so
good.
I
said, speaking of green to red.
Yeah.
When that album came out, I went, Brett Summer's over, guys. It's Warriors Fall. Didn't catch on because I don't have like the reach, but
oh,
I thought it was
gosh,
rather clever.
That's so clever. Yeah, we keep workshopping it and figuring out what we need to flesh out from the album, you know, with book material or song material, but really just how to perform it, like how to do a fight sequence for 90 minutes.
Yeah, how to actually stage it, how to move. No, and which is what I, you know, occurred to me when I was hearing. I was like, I wonder if they'll go movie, not stage, but I'm glad stage is the route, but I think... Having seen Tick, Tick, Boom, and then John Chu's In the Heights, like a movie could work, of course.
Totally.
But also The Warriors is a movie first.
Right.
And I'm not in charge of this. I'm just invested emotionally.
Baby, I'm not in charge of it either. Yeah, yeah, I will stay on the ride for as long as I can. Hold on. Tight. Yeah.
Ajax is fiending for a fight.
Absolutely. Yes.
And when you get to sing Sick of Running, That song, I think, is like, except that she does want violence, I think that's a protest song for the times.
Yes.
And that's how I sing it in my car.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I love that. Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm sick of running. Feel like I'm breaking down. I'm sick of running. Make one mistake and drown. The beat keeps drumming and they just keep on coming. Oh, yeah. Sick of running, our team is wasting downs and we keep running. When we can take these clowns, we see them coming, but they ain't never gonna see us coming. Whoa, whoa. Can we change this track? Get off the road and then take them back. Set to explode and will you take this back? Taking this whole night back. When I take this back, make you a popsicle, pop, pop, pop. Off to the hospital.
I mean, the version we've landed on most recently isn't as much solo stuff from me, because we do have to figure out how I fight and sing at the same time.
Yes.
And that is not easy.
No.
So yes, talk about physical feats. That show is going to, I'm going to be whipped into shape. Yeah, I'm stoked about Warriors. I'm not exactly sure when.
No,
it's
nobody
coming,
knows.
But
nobody knows.
It's coming, baby.
I think we need it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
How did you become involved in that? Where does the ask, where does the reach come from? Like, does Lynn just tap you, or?
Oh, it's so funny. So I've only lived with two men in my life. One is my current baby daddy, and the other man is Chris Sullivan, who goes by Shockwave, who is the beatboxer for Freestyle Love Supreme.
Indeed.
And so I've known Lynn since he was quite young. And I dated Chris in my 20s, and he's one of Lynn's best friends. So I've known him for a long time. And then I went away to grad school, and Lynn sort of just knew me as Chris's girlfriend. He didn't realize I was a good actor. And actually, the first thing he saw me in was Comet in the Tent. He was like, "You're a force of nature." I was like, "Oh, thanks, Lynn." But I never really thought he would call me in for anything, just because of that, like, funny history there. What doesn't mean anything. I just put that in my own head. But you know, I was there for the off-Broadway opening and the Broadway opening of In the Heights. Like, I've known him a long time. And he poached Pippa from us for Hamilton.
That's right.
You know, so I saw the versions of Hamilton. And yeah, I've just known him a long time. But and then he was around because he was close with Sondheim. He saw Here We Are a couple of times. And he just texted me and was like, "I have an opportunity for you. Call me back sometime." And I was like, "Okay." Mm-hmm. And I called and he was like, It's just demos, Amber. I was like, "Okay, cool." And we weren't supposed to know what it was. We signed NDAs, of course. But as soon as I started reading it, I was like, "Is this the Warriors?" And he was like, "Wait, how did you know that?" And I'm like, "I grew up with this movie. Like, I love this movie." So it was pretty cool. But long story short, we did those demos and basically everyone fell in love with the Broadway gals, thank God. And we got to stay, which was really cool. And we get along like a house on fire. So I'm just so, so grateful. But I initially went in thinking I was only doing demos.
And that was okay with you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How often do you get called in to do demos for things? Is that like part of the what makes it all up, the fabric of the job?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I do tons of workshops of things. I do tons of demos. Sometimes I'll just record concept albums. Like, I have a lot of weird albums in the world that it's not my art. I'm just singing on them, you know?
I've seen a Moby Dick that wasn't Malloy's.
That's right.
I mean,
I think there are like three Moby Dick musicals. And that is, called Kill the Whale. And it's so good. It's such a good album. I do that quite a bit. And I don't ever expect them to go anywhere. I'm very happy to just sing in a studio. It's so fun, you know?
I don't, but I bet.
I bet it is. Yeah, it is very fun. Yeah.
I think you're marvelous.
Thank you.
I hope that you continue to thrive and we all continue to benefit from that.
Thank you.
Great to meet you.
Appreciate it. Yeah, you as well.
Have a great run with Rocky Horror.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait to have you there.
Richard O'Brien's The Rocky Horror Show is running, in stilettos no less, at Studio 54 in New York City. For ticket and showtime information, visit roundabouttheater.org. My guest, because sometimes dreams do come true, was Amber Gray. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.